I'll be your gambler, baby. Lay down the bet. We get together, mama. You'll sweat. No place for hiding, baby. No place to run. You pull the trigger of my love gun.
There you go. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you so much for opening up the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, welcome. Welcome to the studio. Welcome to the show. And it's going to be a very interesting conversation. I love these kinds of talks.
Yep.
Because everybody's having these conversations, but people don't really have some solutions for them. I mean, we're sharing what we can, but we have to, right? So it's like, it's got a lot to do with the industry, labor, everything, and innovation. So we got a lot to talk about, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And let me do the quick deets, obviously. So Ryan Borkowski, you can find him on IG under The Exterior Specialist. And then also you can email him at info@theexteriorspecialist.ca. His website is www.theexteriorspecialist.ca, 416-931-0973. And obviously,
formerly known as Impact Siding. Yep. So we started that in 2020. And that was a siding and aluminum install business.
Nice. Let me do a quick shout out. I'm wearing an Artistic Skylights t-shirt. Thank you so much, guys. Marco, everybody there. Hope all is well. And are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands. So visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at @thermeryusa. Looking for cutting edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, Elastichem stands as an industry leading supplying contractors across Canada with top grade closed cell, open cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed cell product. Time is precious and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the U.S. Do you dread the office? Are you spending your personal time on paperwork? Join the club. The good news is there's a solution that isn't hard or overwhelming. With SyncedUp's estimating and job tracking software, you can plan for it and hit your profit goals all while cutting your estimating time by up to 90%. Do you know where your money is going? Are you sure you're even making money? SyncedUp will show you exactly where your money is going with its simple budgeting tool, revealing those cash leaks so you can take back control of your business. Do you wonder if all those payroll hours are making you money or costing you money? SyncedUp tracks your unbillable labor, helping you optimize for project efficiency and ensuring each job is profitable. At SyncedUp, they're here to help contractors thrive, not just survive. Get a budgeting consultation with a SyncedUp expert looking over your shoulder to help you optimize your company's budget for free using the link in the show notes. If you love what you see, you can use the TCL discount and get 20% off on your first 6 months. Annual plan is required. Just click on the link in the show notes to book your call with the sales team and mention the TCL podcast. Check out SyncedUp.com and at SyncedUp on IG to level up your business. Okay, so where do you want to begin here, Ryan?
Where to begin? So I had reached out to you in regard to addressing the labor shortage in construction. So in my experience, it's been a problem that's existed for a while. and it's going to continue to exist. It will likely get worse. So
What do you think time-wise, like 5 years, it's going to get worse?
So I've got a lot of information.
Sure, that's
That if we want to get into that.
Yeah, I totally want to get, but what are your, so you're diving deep into this, right?
Yes.
To get a better understanding of it, but yes. You're coming up with solutions for it.
I think the first step in the problem is, to address the problem, we need to understand it holistically.
Yes.
Before we can then start implementing solutions. So rather than, just speak to, the kids are like this these days, or, we got a big problem and maybe we should do this or whatever. Let's look into the background information, look into some statistics, and just really see what's going on a large scale level, right? So, I don't know if you have any questions before I get into
it. No, I want to get right into it. And I guess a lot of your data is coming from, I guess, on our side of the border, right? But are you seeing, have you dove into south of the border and trying to figure out, is it comparable? Is it like they're having a similar situation, right?
I've been able to put together quite a bit of information that will speak to both in Canada and internationally.
Perfect.
I'll start by saying a couple years ago, I was listening to a few lectures and I came across a speaker, and his name is Peter Zeihan. And he is a geopolitical analyst.
Okay.
And so regardless of, any kind of political sort of like opinions or leanings, he speaks a lot on population demographics. And so if anyone's been paying attention, you hear a lot of people talking about the declining birth rates in developed countries. So
That's global.
Global. So it's happening predominantly in developed countries, and yes. And on average, the birth rate is declining year over year.
What's the direct cause of that?
From what I understand, and again, I'm not an expert in
this.
No. But from what I understand is the over time, which is what a lot of people don't look at, is the transition from being an agricultural-based society to being a more developed society. Mm. So back in the day, what Peter Zeihan will comment on is that when you lived on a farm, more children were extra labor. So you would have more children. And so you could have a ton of children. Cost of raising those children was low, and it was beneficial to have children. So as we develop and we move into cities and people start living in condos, things become more expensive, stuff like that. People are having less children because rather than being an asset on a farm, they become a financial liability, a time liability. And not to say that, you shouldn't have children. I definitely think people should do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very obvious in the data that people are just on average having less children. So if you look at that in relation to, labor and employment, we can see over time that this pattern was predictable. So if we get into the statistics, I'll start by sharing a few of Peter Zeihan's demographics.
Totally. Please do it. Yeah. And please forgive me if I'm going to interrupt you because got a train of thought going on, because I find this extremely fascinating that obviously we have the data that's there. Mm-hmm. And if we were a smart collective group of individuals, whether you're 100% right to start talking about, doesn't matter if you're what level playing field on the political scheme of things.
Yes.
You can see that this was coming, right? It wasn't a secret, right?
No.
And there's enough data globally speaking that you can look at certain civilizations that went down these paths and things are going to incur as a result of it.
Yes.
And we're seeing it now in Canada. So we are seeing that reduction of birth rate and everything's happening and the way, so it's like we should be paying attention to other cultures that already hit that milestone probably 50 years ago or whatever. And now what's happening to them, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's worth looking up Peter and checking him out and doing your own homework as well too, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So there's, I've always been on the side of, there's not necessarily bad information. It's how you interpret it too. So,
yes.
You can have an opinion, but at the end of the day, you should look at both sides, look at all opinions and then come up with your own conclusion. Right. rather than just check out the 10-second soundbite, spend the hour to watch the full lecture so you can hear all components of the
argument. Wouldn't that be nice?
Of the argument, yeah.
It would be really nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to, yeah, all right.
So, where's the camera here?
You can pick any one of these, okay. Yeah.
So this is the Canadian population demographic.
Okay.
And so what it shows is the males and females of our Canadian population. So the largest class or largest generation was the baby boomers.
Yes.
And so what Peter will talk about is that a large generation produces a large generation, right? So the replacement rate to maintain your current level of population is 2.1 children per woman.
And the number right now is
1.4 or 1.6. Yeah. So it's, yes, it's below replacement rate. So yes, we are losing people over time.
Yes.
But the reason why people don't necessarily recognize or feel this is that Canada has a lot of immigration that will offset for the fact that we are not having as many children. And the other thing is people are living longer. So the total population is increasing, but it's skewed because, again, we're living longer and we're adding people to the country by means of immigration.
Yeah.
So if you look at the chart, this big bulge here, that is the baby boomer category. And where it retracts inside, that's Gen X.
Okay.
So that would have been the children born of the generation before the baby boomers.
Yeah.
And then this other bulge here, that is the millennial class. So that would be myself.
So I'm Gen X there.
Yes, you're Gen X, so you're in here.
Yeah.
And then, so Gen X would then have the Zoomers, which is below the millennials.
Yes.
And so you can see in the chart that there's a significant drop-off around age 20, right? 18, 20, something like that. So when you graduate high school, you're approximately 18 years old. So
was that fine, Angelina? Sorry, was that fine, the reflection or anything like that? No, it was good? Okay, yeah. Cool. Thanks.
So that is just our natural population demographic structure. And you brought up the point, is this happening other places in the world? So if you look at Europe, same pattern, right? So we have a very small population in the category of people, young people that we would be targeting to then enter into the construction industry. So this is not to say that it's going to be a problem just in construction. This is just a general problem that there are just fewer people. So the labor market is going to be far more competitive because there's a smaller pool of people to pick from. And so one thing we talk about before was, is this happening over the world? We looked at Europe because Canada's got a lot of immigrants from
Europe.
Where
is it not happening?
I was just looking up in regard to sort of more relevant to us.
Sure.
At the moment. I don't remember exactly where it's not happening. I know countries in Africa have positive birth rates, but in our industry, we do have a lot of labor, and shout out to all the guys from Mexico. We've worked with a ton of guys from Mexico and countries in South America.
Yep.
Incredibly hard workers.
Coming up here, working hard.
Working hard.
For sure.
Yep. Polite people.
Yes.
You know, I've never had a really bad experience with any of the guys we've worked with.
Great food.
Yeah, great food. Exactly. Like the music is fantastic.
Yes.
So, but so we, if we look at the population of Mexico, Mexico has more of a pyramid shape.
Okay.
But then they are starting to, as they develop, enter into the same phase of a declining birth rate.
Interesting.
As they develop. So what Peter will talk about is even Mexico now needs a Mexico to get people to then enter into the labor force. And so...
is Mexico's issue... it's growing because of them moving out and moving to other places?
So from what I understand, the main cause of the labor difference in Mexico is that because the United States is pulling away from manufacturing in China, a lot of it is being reshored to Mexico, where the supply chain and logistics is much easier. So you can... allocate your manufacturing to Mexico rather than ship it across the world, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a good labor skill set in Mexico that they're able to then take over a lot of these manufacturing jobs. So rather than people from Mexico wanting to go to United States or Canada, which, you know, they probably do want to, but there's more opportunities for them at home now. So they're less incentivized to want to go to other countries to make more money. And an example of this would be, we tried a guy out from Mexico, and he was a teacher in Mexico. So a full-time teaching salary in Mexico was the equivalent of like an entry-level wage in construction in Canada. Wow. So that was the incentive to come to Canada to make money, to support his family back home. But again, as more jobs become available back home, you could do the calculation, is it worth me going to Canada to then to make money to then send back home? So so yeah, the problems we're facing are not very easily solved. And so with that being said, there's a couple topics that sort of tie into this population demographic thing.
Is anybody in government right now currently in Canada talking about this?
To be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure because perhaps not, but you hear a lot of guys who do podcasts, they bring up these issues and they talk about it with other guests. So it is something that it's very well documented, but you know, are we talking about it or is the average person talking about it? Perhaps not, right? But
a lot of people are talking about it, but not realizing that there is a solution to this. There's a way of approaching it.
Yeah, there definitely is a way of approaching it, and I think it would have to be approached from a variety of directions.
Yeah.
So one of the obvious ones then is immigration.
Yes.
Right. So if the question is how do we get people into construction, we first need to acknowledge that we have a significantly smaller pool of people to start with. Right. And then secondly, we need to look at it from their perspective. So we need to play the devil's advocate and say, if I was a young person today, what would motivate me to want to get into construction or what do I want to do for a career? Right. So we can look at the opinions of Canadian kids, and then we can look at the opinions of kids internationally. So
they are different.
You'd be surprised. So
really?
I was doing some research last night. So again, if I misspeak, you know, please don't crucify me.
But you've done some homework. But I do want to share that. I mean, like in the 8 years of this current government, I think
that's the international birth rate. That's
the international birth rate.
I'm going to leave these with you. So this is totally the international.
So like I know that in 8 years of our current government, like we went from 36 million people in Canada to now we're over 41 million.
Yes.
And someone told me a stat about how it's like less than 1,000 of those people actually entered the construction force.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So how do you get like 5 million people coming to this country and less than 1,000 of them enter the construction industry?
I think a lot of it has to do with incentives. The incentives to get into the construction industry.
Yeah.
So I found some discrepancies in a few areas that if we are going to be relying on immigration to get people to work in construction, we do need to provide accurate information and yes, provide resources so that way they can enter the industries that will be the best fit for them. So before I touch on the international opinion, I found a study out of the University of New Brunswick. And so they interviewed high school age kids and they asked them, what industries are you looking to go into in the future? So we've got this chart, and I'll leave this with you as sure. Well. But, let me refer to my notes there.
No, don't worry. It's all good.
Okay. So University of New Brunswick Career Aspiration 2019 survey. So there's 969 surveys completed. And so out of the top three desired professions of these young people, number one was professional scientific and technical services at 25.39%. The second was healthcare and social assistance at 19% approximately. And then the third one was classified as other trades. So the most cited professions in the other trades were mechanic and welder at 10% of the people surveyed. And then what would you guess at construction trades of the percentage of these people?
It's going to be like a minor single digit amount. Like it's going to be next to nothing.
Yeah. So it was 2.65%.
Wow.
So of the high school age students, 2.65% said they were interested in getting into construction trades. And then 6.58% said they don't know. So
why do you think that is, Ryan? Is it because the trades are not attractive to this group of people? Or is there just not the correct information being shared about the trades?
I think it is a bit nuanced, but I was listening to a few of your podcasts where you were talking about how kids don't want to be perceived as being a tradesperson, or maybe it's looked down upon. And regardless of what trade you do, I think that is definitely an issue. Yeah. The perception, especially with Instagram and stuff these days, you can easily look online and see that people are making money in other areas or crypto or real estate or whatever it is, and they make it look very easy to make a lot of money. However, the guys working on construction sites, covered in mud, dirty and all that, is that glitz and glam flash that maybe you want to be perceived as? At the end of the day, perhaps not.
It's influencing them.
I think it does have a big influence for sure.
Yeah.
Where was I going to? Okay. So
the percentages of what they're seeing, the kids that were surveyed. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a lot of information.
No, it's great information, it's kind of reaffirming what we're kind of going down, right?
And so we're going down this path.
Yeah.
And so the one thing I found very cool was, so this is from Statistics Canada. And so our number for the people interested in trades was 2.65. And so if we go to this Statistics Canada report, this is from the Education and Labor Market Activities 18 to 24 years old from 2021 to 2022.
Okay.
And so in 2021, 101,000 18-year-old to 24-year-olds were registered apprentices, while the population in Canada of 18 to 24-year-olds for the same year was almost 3.3 million. This leads to an estimated participation rate for apprenticeship of approximately 3% of 18 to 24-year-olds. So Statistics Canada is showing 3%
versus,
and our interest in the trades is 2.65%. So it's very close. Again, this is one study. There's probably other studies. It may have changed, but...
But the real concern is the number.
The real concern is the number. Absolutely. So if we go back to the Canadian population demographic, and we need to get more people into the trades, the category of the 18 to 24, there's in total in Canada only 3.55 million. So it represents 9% of our population.
18 to 24.
18 to 24.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so we say, how do we get young people interested in construction? We're going to be competing with other industries to get these people in, which obviously we need, right? Robotics is always talked about, but there's a cost to that, and it's going to be difficult to implement given different site conditions and existing buildings. You could go down the route of automation for new construction, but again, all the existing buildings, there's so many variables that it would be incredibly difficult to try to automate those things. Yeah.
So are the numbers similar to the immigration coming in at that same age group?
Yes.
But then again, we're also have to factor in that you have a lot of immigrants coming in that are not a part of that 18 to 24, that are older, that Absolutely. Have the skills in other areas that are coming into construction.
Yep.
And I guess a large portion of them are staying in construction. and working in construction and finding it as another option. And I'm talking about the IE engineers and doctors mm-hmm. and everybody else like that, right? Mm-hmm. So are the numbers in line with the same that's going on regarding our homegrown people?
Yes. So if we, and again, this is all stuff I could find online
to reinforce
what we're talking about or to demonstrate that it's an across the board problem, not just specific to here. So there was another study done where they interviewed 20,000 children in primary schools around the world that saw themselves later on in the world of work. So they interviewed 20,000 kids across different countries, and this is not just developed countries, but also developing countries. And so in 2018, these are the top listed occupations for girls and then for boys. So the top listed occupation for girls across the world was doctors at 15.6%. Second to that, teaching, then business managers, lawyers, nurses and midwives, psychologists, designers, veterinarians, police officers, and architects. So out of those 10 professions, that accounted for about 53% of the careers that
women
want to get into.
Okay.
While they're in school, what they think they want to get into in the future. So if we go to the top 10 occupations cited by boys, the top one was engineer at 7.7%, then business managers, doctors at 6%, ICT professionals, sports people, teachers, police officers, motor vehicle mechanics, lawyers, and architects. So
trades aren't even there.
Not even mentioned. So... if we're going to make a dent in the problem, I think we need to find out what is motivating kids or what they will be motivated by to then pursue the trades.
Okay, so let's discuss what's the current government doing to make the trades attractive to individuals of that age group. So what I see is that they're targeting groups that are not necessarily all that interested in coming into the trades.
Yeah. So I can't speak to the government policies. I've been so busy with work that this is just something in my spare time that I find interesting. I would love to look into it more to see what programs are in place or how the younger people are being encouraged. But the one thing I did find interesting is if we are going to be relying on immigration as a means to get more people interested in the industry, we need to then communicate effectively from the trade side as well as the government side.
Yes.
So I looked at another Statistics Canada study where they published the average wage for trade contractors. Sorry, I just got to pull it up here.
No, don't worry.
Too much information.
So I'm going to guess that the average wage was below what the generation was expecting.
I don't know about the expectation, but the discrepancy I found was that the average wage for trade contractors, so the guys who are actually doing the carpentry, doing the siding, the roofing, the windows, drywall, whatever it was. So it worked out that the average wage was $35 an hour, which is pretty good for if you didn't necessarily go to college or you didn't go to university and you graduated high school, you're willing to work hard and learn, $35 an hour is not bad, and there's definitely potential upside. But if we go to the Canadian Immigration website, they publish the top...
Hang on a second, Ryan. Can you just turn... it's fine. No, I need you to turn can point to the mic. Don't worry about the paper, the copy, because we won't be able to read it from the camera at that point. But yeah, if you just stay this way then I could get you on the audio perfectly. Good. Okay, cool. Sorry to interrupt you out there.
No, all good.
Cool. You want to... And then shift that way a tiny bit. Okay, so no problem.
I'm all over the place here.
No, it's all good. Okay.
Okay. So... on the Canadian Immigration website, the title was the 10 Most In-Demand Jobs in Ontario. So this is if someone from another country was considering coming here and they want to do some research to see what jobs are in demand.
All the jobs, not just construction.
Just all the jobs. Yeah, yeah. Just talking.
Okay.
You know, we need to get people into the country, A, and then B, we also need to encourage them to go into the industries where they're needed. So the on the website, the top 10, number one was registered nurses.
Okay.
And they show a median annual wage of $76,050 in Ontario based on a 37.5-hour work week. Second was physicians. And they cite that the median annual salary is $228,362. So it goes on to outline everything. So delivery truck driver, $40,950. Heavy equipment operators, 50.
In today's time, 2024, delivery truck driver is $40,000.
That's what it says based on this, yeah, government page. Oh, yeah, sorry, this was November 7th, 2022. So okay. It's likely right. Increased.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yep. Oh yeah. No. Sorry.
That's totally fine. It's totally cool.
I think there's been recently UPS announced something about a wage increase to like $27 an hour, and I don't know. I find that pretty crazy to drive a truck around, and
I'm just surprised from the number. Like nurse 75, physician was 200, six figures, and now you're going to truck driver was 40. So going down the list, okay.
Yep, going down the list. Heavy equipment operators, 54,600.
Okay.
Software developer, 78,000. Again, based on a 37.5 hour work week.
Work week, yeah.
And then we have sales manager, 102,000. Cloud architect, 80,000. And so number eight on the list is construction trades. Okay. And so what they are showing as the median annual income for construction trades that people from other countries would see is $40,950. But if we look at the average hourly wage of $35 an hour at a 2,000 hour work year, that's $70,000. So if we're trying to advertise to people from other countries the potential for income, I think that published number of 40,950 is not necessarily incentivizing.
No.
And maybe doesn't reflect on the true wages that are out there.
Yeah.
So that's what I found interesting is that we say we need more people in construction, but maybe we're not necessarily communicating it in the best possible way.
What others are on the list do you have there offhand?
So that was number eight. So number nine was machining tool operators.
Okay.
66,500, and then cooks and food and beverage service. Yeah, the hospitality.
Where were they at?
They were at 30,712. So.
So immigration coming in.
Yep.
Let's talk realistic here. Immigration coming in, they're either going to be a truck driver or they're going to be a laborer. Alicia.
Yeah. Again, I don't know definitively, so I can't say with certainty, but if there was qualifications for specific jobs that were either not recognized or if they didn't have the qualifications, it would be less likely that people coming here are going to enter into the workforce with the skill set they have from their previous employment. It is challenging because here's an anecdotal example. We hired a guy who... he left Ukraine as the war was starting. He was a young guy, has a family, three kids, and you know is moving to save his life and potentially his family's life. And so back in Ukraine, he was a marketer, super smart guy, super bright. And so I got in contact with him through one of my friend's fathers who is active in the Ukrainian community. And so he said, I know this young guy. He's a great hard worker. He's looking for a job. And, I'd like to connect you guys. So we connected. He came out to work the first day. And the hustle and the drive, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I was installing some soffit, aluminum soffit in a porch. So J trim to J trim. And when you do that, it's incredibly difficult to get that last piece in because you've got to hook it into the soffit. You got to get it in the J term.
Pinch and then, point on all four sides.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's finicky. And first day, I'm not going to mention names, but just because I haven't asked permission, but but yeah, first day he's in there. He's like, I want to try putting it in. And from that point, I was like, you're hired. Yeah, no problem. Like,
He got it.
He picked it up really quickly. But again, in Ukraine, he was into marketing and he picked up technology really easily, like very digitally savvy. Yeah. But again, his qualifications to then enter one of those jobs, will push him into areas where he can make more money. And right now that seems to be construction, right? So
He's got three kids and he's got a family. And
exactly.
Yeah. So he's driven, motivated.
He is very motivated.
It goes back to your graph. Three kids versus 1.4 kids or whatever it is.
Yep.
So it's like the lack of children, a lack of population growth, giving us the mindset not to push to grow.
It's
contributing.
It's contributing for sure. Yeah.
Because tradespeople that I know, I mean, I'm just being honest, like, I don't know many tradespeople that have more than maybe two kids. I think two is like a big number in that scheme of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be a handful that I've spoken to that might have three or four kids. Mm-hmm. But two is that cutoff point, right? And even at two, they're below where they should be.
Yeah, and not everyone is having kids, right? Some people choose not to have kids, which if that's your choice, by all means, everyone has the right to live their life the way they want it. Or the way they want to. So again, it affects everybody, not just us in construction, but I think moving forward, if we are facing a labor shortage, we need to find the correct incentives to then get people into the industry. So personally, when I started in construction, I was always motivated by the ability to have flexibility in my schedule and to make money as I wanted or needed. So rather than be an hourly employee, I chose to then pursue subcontracting and then running my own business and selling my own projects. Mm-hmm. So I think regardless of if people like working with their hands or in the trades, money does talk, right?
Yeah.
So if we can collectively in our industry collaborate together to almost provide a guide or the correct information to show people that we are able to increase our labor force simply by attracting people for the purpose of money, which I would never suggest that quality gets sacrificed in order to make money. Personally, we chose to not grow our business as fast in order to maintain quality.
Yeah.
So for me, that's very important. But I think you've mentioned before that, having mentors and mentorship is a big role. And so that would be a great starting point to have mentors as well as have the mentors be able to discuss the potential earnings capacity for tradespeople.
That's why I've been huge about it, where it's mm-hmm. like, let's say you take those same numbers that you're presenting it to immigrants coming into this country. Yeah. Fine. You present that number of 40,000 as an entry-level tradesperson, but you kind of explain to them the objective to get to $35 an hour, which translates to 70,000.
Yeah.
But the government should actually be saying, we'll actually line you up and pair you up with a mentor.
Yeah, that'd be a great program if we could accomplish something like that. I'm not going to throw out too many names,
go on. Why not? What do you mean?
Oh no. So I was talking with another aluminum contractor.
Do you want to share anybody's name or you just haven't gotten the permission?
I haven't got permission.
Okay. Yeah. But, no problem.
I don't want to,
sure, no problem.
Step on anyone's toes or yeah. but I was talking to another aluminum contractor and these guys do incredible work. Same thing. They're in the same boat. They can sell all these projects. They can get a lot of work, but their issue is the skilled labor and the guys who are going to do a good quality job. And so they're facing that problem just as we are, just as everyone is. And so we were talking about, how do we get perhaps like some training programs applied or whatnot. So he was a Croatian guy. And so he was saying, oh, you know, I could get guys to come, you know, from Croatia and we could train them. And like, we were talking about, oh, what could we pay them? And like, how could we go about that? But part of the problem that came up was the cost of living. So if you do the calculation for the person who is going to be immigrating here, if you were to leave your home country to come to Canada, is the math going to work out that you're going to actually save more money than you would have back home? And
it won't. I'm not even doing the quick math right now.
Yeah.
It won't.
Yeah. It's because our cost of living is incredibly high. And so I was just doing some quick calculations on, you know, cost of living.
When did our cost of living start getting out of its way? Like was it a decade ago, or like what was the story here when rent started just going to the certain levels? Like,
I can't necessarily, again, speak to that. I don't want to give my opinion. I'd rather
For sure.
Speak to the facts. So I'll gladly say, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no problem.
I don't know that. But just for like average numbers. So the average rent in Canada as of February was for, I believe, a one bedroom apartment was $2,193. Yep. So over the course of a year, that's $26,316. Let's say a car, right? If you had a $20,000 car, it lasted you 10 years and we're not going to account for depreciation. We're not going to account for, anything else. The average insurance is $1,655 a year, average gas, $1,600 a year. And then if your $20,000 car lasts you 10 years, that's $2,000 a year. And that's not financing a vehicle. There's no interest there. That's just breaking it down. So to own a vehicle per year in Canada, again, an efficient, low-ranking vehicle, $5,255. So one of our problems is getting guys to the job sites. So with hourly employees, if they have their own car, that's fantastic. Like we see that as very valuable. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have a vehicle, we have to coordinate, getting the guys to meet us at a subway station, or maybe someone picks them up. Maybe they meet us at the job site if they live nearby. But even that factor of how expensive it is to own a vehicle is affecting our ability to have guys work on our job sites.
So. But you're not surviving at that point. So let's just go back to the trade.
Yeah.
The labor, 40,000, rent average is 21 for one bedroom. You're still at, what would you say, 26,000 per year? 24,000, sorry.
Yeah, so 26,000 a year in rent.
In rent. Plus now you've got the car expense if you did get a car.
Yep.
So now you're over 30,000. Now you're left for the entire year $10,000, less than $10,000.
Yes.
Based on entry level coming into construction.
Yes.
To survive. And that's food.
Well, no. So we haven't even touched on food. So,
No, that's
the
where
difference,
we're going.
But
yeah, we're going in there, right? So now we have less than 10,000.
Yep.
Let's start feeding ourselves now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's feed ourselves for the year. Okay. So the observed cost for a 19 to 30 year old male in Canada was $4,193 per year. So if you add up your vehicle, your food, and your rent,
you're 35.
It adds up quite quickly. So if you were to add up you paying the rent by yourself, one person, your food and your insurance and nothing else, is $31,570. Let's say you split the rent with someone, or you have a partner, plus your vehicle and rent, you're at $18,400.
But you're multiplying the food.
But yeah, that's only for one person.
That's
so
what
then,
I mean. So if you're splitting the rent.
Yeah.
But then now you have to factor in food expense.
Yes.
You're multiplying the food expense now.
Yep. Yeah. So it starts to add up, right? So.
And these immigrants are doing this. They're doing this math.
Yes.
Trying to figure it out before even coming here now.
Exactly.
They weren't doing it the last few years, right? But now they're doing it.
Yeah, and I think any reasonable person would do their homework to do the math and see if they're going to move here and then be in a financial struggle, right? Who can blame that person, right? Do you want to travel to a new country and then once you get there be faced with financial stress on top of the stress of adapting to a new country, new environment and all that? It gets difficult.
Did you come across any data about how many people are returning back to the country that they came from?
I haven't looked into that yet. Okay. I would love to, take a month or two, write a book and cover all of this.
But we saw that. We started to see that last year where a lot of Indian people that coming here were actually going back, right?
Yes.
And there was quite a bit of backlash on social media regarding that. But those are just being idiots. The thing is that there are people going back.
Yeah.
Because they quickly realized I can't survive here now based on these numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's... I don't think there's an easy solution, but again, if we understand the problem holistically, it'll help us in the approach that we use to solve the problem. So so one of the things that I've thought about for a while is if we don't have the ability to attract more people, or if we just don't have the people, then essentially we have to do more with less. So we need to look to innovation. We need to look to new methods, new practices in order to keep up with the demand. And you're seeing a lot of this through social media. You're seeing a lot of people take risks to then look for ways to innovate. And so I brought a little something just as an example.
What do you got? What's going on? Don't worry, take your time. Do whatever you got to do.
Okay, so if you go on Instagram and you look up the Siding Guy, he is a one-man siding installer in Alberta.
I know him. Yeah.
And so if you know him, you know that he's made this product called Siding Tips. Yep. Okay, so this is a 3D printed adapter that goes on a DeWalt roofing nailer. And so what it does is it provides the offset for the nail that you use to install vinyl siding. So vinyl siding traditionally is hand nailed and it needs to be loose to allow for the expansion and contraction of the siding. So again, he's a one man show. He installs all his own pump jacks and he can do a house by himself in a week. He'll show it all. He'll tally up the hours and
Highly skilled.
Very skilled.
Right.
Very skilled.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring up the siding tips is so a 3D printed piece of plastic, right? Probably costs him a couple bucks to produce. I think he sells them for anywhere from like $20 to $50, something like that. But if you could achieve even, a 10, 20% increase in efficiency over the course of one day, right? Let's say you're installing 200 square feet in a day hand nailing. If you can get 10% more, you're 220 square feet now, right? Over the course of, a year that adds up. And then we can look at it as what did this little innovation do for overall productivity and how much more productivity did we get from this versus having another person, right? So if, let's say, he could produce 50% more, right? That would be the equivalent of another siding guy installing half of the year, right? So he's just replaced the need for another guy by means of creating a tool that can speed him up.
Yeah.
So I think that's incredible.
But those opportunities they're there for almost every trade, I would say, confidently.
Oh, absolutely.
You can come up, if you stop, smell the roses, and come up with innovation that will help you produce efficiency faster,
100%.
Which translates to profitability.
Yep. Yeah, and another example in our trade, again, saw the siding guy use this one tool. So when you're installing soffit, you can use the soffit screws, and then you install with the screw gun. But when you're up on a ladder, you've got your drill, you've got the screws, and you got to put the screw on the drill, go install it, and it can be very slow. So we saw him use a narrow crown stapler versus use a screw. So I was looking at it like, okay, let's try this out, right? So we purchased a narrow crown stapler and we started using that. I'm like, wow, this is incredibly faster. One hand, right? You could have one hand to hold the soffit, one hand to nail it in with the narrow crown stapler, and you could set the depth so it doesn't overshoot. And so this tool allowed us to drastically increase our efficiency. So you look at the cost of that tool, and let's say it's $500, right? We already have the batteries, so we're set up to use that tool at relatively low cost. And then so we do the math. How much do we charge for soffit, and how much more soffit could we install in one day with this tool? And then you can work out the math to be like, okay, it'll take me 5 days or 6 days to pay for that tool, but I get to keep this tool for multiple years.
Yeah.
Right? So if we can look to find efficiency wherever we can, we can at least reduce the burden of having less labor. I don't think it's going to solve it entirely, but at least it will help. And then at the same time, working with products that maybe are more readily available or that benefit the installer as far as the efficiency of the product, that's where I want to spend my time and focus my time and see if I can help in that aspect of construction.
But, okay, so I like that, Ryan. What I like is that it's also going to inspire other tradespeople.
Yeah.
For their own trade or yeah. other siding people or what have you mm-hmm. to consider doing these efficiencies.
100%, yeah.
Which makes them more profitable.
Yeah, and that's what we go to work for at the end of the day. Like, we obviously you like what you do, but
yeah.
but everyone has to make money at the end of the day, and with the rising cost of everything, we need to become efficient. I think that's just a hard truth, but you can keep doing things that don't work, but over time, the companies that will succeed are the ones who can find those efficiencies.
So can I generalize so far what you've shared here and say that we basically need more farmers having sex when we're actually losing farmers? We're losing farmland.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of issues now around farmers globally. I think there's a lot of protests happening in Europe, and
I saw the best thing yesterday. There's a huge amount of all the farmers. Like, we know that it's being yeah. suppressed and everything like that. And I personally love seeing all the farmers in their tractors and everything like that, dumping soil and throwing soil. Yeah. And I love seeing all that yeah. stuff. And that's just reality to me. But I saw the best thing in my neighborhood is that there's a home that they live off of a creek, right? So mm-hmm. there's a path. And they just tilled all okay. of the city land
yep.
right behind their fence line.
Okay.
On the entire back portion of their yard.
Yep.
1,000% illegal regarding bylaws, right?
Yeah.
But they're an older couple, and I'm like, they're going to plant their tomatoes, they're going to plant their cucumbers, mm-hmm. they're going to plant everything on that land there.
Yep.
And I don't have a single problem with that.
No.
Right? And I think that if every neighbor was doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying is, like, we're forcing farmers to give up land, and then we're not inviting, not even on that list of people, farming wasn't even a part of that. Coming here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
there is such a loss of farmers, families.
Absolutely. With farming, though, I have seen the case for automation, and I think yeah. there's a lot of consolidation in the farming industry, where land cost is expensive. It's a significant investment to buy property and land. So again, I'm not very well educated in that space, but
farming and automation, it actually will spike other people to come in regarding the technology of that automation.
Yeah, the technology.
So they're educated in a similar technology yep. that requires that mindset, that brain
yep.
that knows that machinery.
Yes.
So it's like you're replacing the physical farmer
yep.
on the land, but you're contributing to the machine automation that's
yes.
innovating
that's
the land.
That's at least
now.
Helping, yeah.
You still need that person there associated with that.
Yeah, and that's where I think we even see in the information about what career paths kids are going to go down, and the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math. That was one of the top rated categories where young people want to get into because of all the technology, gains these days, right? So you could, in some capacity, help the construction industry gain efficiency by means of, working on the technology, absolutely. Yeah. But it is difficult if you had never worked in construction. So if you had never worked in construction, it's hard to then implement something where the people who have to use it don't necessarily have a say in it, right? So unless the building practice gets changed. So in saying that, I saw something where in Australia, they are building homes with an automated block layer. So,
I saw that.
Yeah. So you can see this big conveyor truck. It can run 24 hours a day. There's less safety hazards. There's less people. And it's just continuously just running block and then installing the block on the house. So if over time the cost of building in the traditional sense becomes too high, the calculation will get made that rather than do it the traditional way, we're going to look to do our building in a different way that is perhaps cheaper, right? I think you've said this before in other podcasts, but we can't charge more and more and more infinitely. It's just someone's going to say
our increases don't. Yeah. Are not dictated by economical growth on any country level, right? We can't turn around and just start saying we're going to charge this much now.
Yeah, I mean, again, if someone wants to pay that much money, by all means, if they have the money, and trades guys aren't going to say no if we keep getting paid more money, right? And perhaps that's incentivizing to get more people, is that the prices have gotten.
It doesn't solve the cost of living, though.
Does not, no. No.
That cost of living has been increasing as far back as probably, I'm going to say, 20 years, when it was mostly in the BC area, mm-hmm. where you started seeing these astronomical numbers regarding mm-hmm. purchases of homes there.
Yeah.
And then it just went right across the whole landscape now, mm-hmm. right? So Canada being at the top of the most expensive places in the world to live,
yep.
but yet Canada being at the bottom regarding GDP, like, what's going on here? Like, you can't have that kind of a sway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, okay, so I see exactly where you're seeing why there is a shortage.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the shortage is it's been accumulated over time, and perhaps the time to address it was 10 years ago,
yeah.
but we're seeing the effects of it now. I don't know how exactly to solve the problem.
To the farmers having sex.
Yeah.
But are you doing all this because you're looking to actually publish? Like you're going to compile this and put it together to get this all out there?
Yeah. So I would love to get feedback from multiple different trades. And I would love to have conversations with, other leading contractors or trade contractors to see where do you see opportunities in your business that we could implement subcontracting as an example, or maybe piecework as an example. Again, from my own experience, I was always motivated to work hard to make money. When I was in high school, I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do career-wise. I thought maybe I'll go into architecture, but then, I didn't want to take art class and stuff, or maybe I wanted to go into business, but, didn't necessarily do well in the courses that were the prerequisites, even though I had the skill set, I could do it, but, I didn't tick that box. Grade 11 functions, I didn't pay attention, right? So, yeah. And that's on me. So that kind of closed a couple of doors as far as what I thought I would do, but what I ended up doing was going to George Brown College and doing the construction management program,
which is a good program.
Yeah, it's a great program, and that's how I met a lot of my friends. I'm still in contact with a lot of guys from the program. They're in the industry. We're all doing something related or relevant to the course. So through that program, I was able to, network, meet a bunch of people, and we've had a lot of success as a result of having those contacts.
Do you think, Ryan, that the majority of the current construction force here in Canada is not really thinking about this problem. They're not really considering it a problem from themselves. They're just riding the storm and just focusing on where they can still be profitable in their business, and that this is too big of a problem for them to kind of even tackle it.
Yeah, individually, I don't think any one contractor is going to be able to, you know, find the silver bullet to solve the solution. But back to the book and getting feedback from other contractors is, if we can't motivate people to do construction trades for the sake of just loving construction, can we at least demonstrate the ability to be a subcontractor that you can get paid based on your desire to work?
Yeah.
So could we, you know, between the different contractors, get feedback? Okay, which trades can we implement subcontracting? Which trades is it just going to be a disaster, right? You know, on renovations, could we do subcontracting, or is it new construction? So piecework as an example. I started my construction career in roofing. So I would do, you know, roofing on weekends and in summers during college. And that's how I was able to, you know, pay for whatever I needed at the time and whatnot. And so I started off as an hourly employee. And then in time, found out, oh, guys can get paid by the bundle. And so I was like, okay, like, I'm pretty ambitious and hard worker, and you know, I'd like to try getting paid by the bundle. And so for me, that was very motivating to do the calculation of, okay, if I were to get $15 an hour at the time, I think this was like 2010, I want to say. I think minimum wage was like 10 something, and then I was getting paid 15 as a roof laborer. So the piecework component was very motivating. So if in a 10-hour day, if I were to make $150 as an hourly employee, but if I could install, you know, let's say X amount of bundles and get paid X per bundle, I could see that I'm getting paid significantly more than if I were an hourly employee.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what got me into the roofing business, is that I would always check the numbers from this opportunity to that opportunity and be like, this is incredible money for the amount of time that I spent, right? So if you can make a week's wage in, let's say, 2 days, right? You're only working 20 hours versus 40 hours, but making the same amount of money. And given that it does cost you money to get to work and from work and the opportunity cost, right? If you're at work, you're also not doing something else. Could we implement, you know, some kind of a guide to people to show that these opportunities are out there and that you can make good money, not necessarily working all the time? You know, if anyone who's worked in certain trades, you know, if you're up at 5 or 6 every day over a long week, you know, by Friday, you're gassed, right? It adds up. But if you can concentrate the amount of money you make in less time, even if you made the same amount of money, you still get the freedom, which I think a lot of people value these days.
Did you start to do that early on, looking at all opportunities regarding the efficiency of time?
Yeah, it's always been on my mind. So when I started doing the roofing, it was during college. It was a 4-year program, so it would be summers, it would be Saturdays, whenever I had free time, or if I didn't have a class Thursday, I'd try to line up the jobs then. But so I graduated in 2014, and I went to work for a larger GC into their graduate program. And so it was a 3-year rotational program where it was meant to be a fast track to management. Okay. So it was a very good program. We had the career fair at George Brown, and, you know, given my roofing background, I applied to Flynn, right? I thought, okay, roofing background, education in construction management, Flynn, like, I've got a good shot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't hear from them. So I was like, okay, like, no problem. I'll be patient. I'll wait and see what happens. So I think I applied to 5-6 companies, and then ended up going to Brookfield Multiplex. Which is, they were relatively new to Canada at the time, and I think still getting set up. They had some projects. So yeah, so I entered into that program. But again, I would do work on Saturdays, right? My goal at the time was I wanted to buy a house before I was 25. That was in my head. That was my goal. So you look at the salary at the time, I think I started at $45,000 for their graduate program, which would be the equivalent of like a coordinator or like the same responsibilities. But then, you know, if I were to do a roof on a Saturday, again, selling my own project, not working for other people at this point. So, yeah. So you do make a bit more money. You know, it wasn't out of the question to make anywhere from $800 to $1,500 in a day if you could coordinate it well.
Yep.
If you had the help, if you, you know, got the bin there, the shingles, everything, and you punched it out,
yeah.
That wasn't uncommon. So I would do that on Saturdays, and to me it was, I'll work the Saturdays in order to save for the house, and then you know, that's good for me. But then at Brookfield, the one project I got moved to, they wanted me to start going in on Saturdays. And so to me, I was wanting to buy a house, and this was like a great way for me to save. Like I knew, you know, roofing for me wasn't forever. It's a hard physical job, and so shout out to all the roofers. I have mad respect for
seasonally, yeah, winters, summers. Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. No, anyone I've worked with in roofing, you build a camaraderie.
Of course.
100%. It's a tough job, and you know, you help each other out. So yeah, definitely a lot of respect for those guys.
So how did you wiggle that where they wanted you to do the Saturdays, but the Saturdays were being given, you were setting us out to save the money to build the future, right?
Yes, that was the goal. Yeah. So that was very conflicting for me, right? Do I stay in this job where it's got very good security? It's a great company, and you know, do I go that route or do I go the entrepreneurial route? Right, maybe double down on the roofing and try that. So I did some soul searching, and ultimately I decided, you know what, I'll just take a shot at running my own roofing business. I can always go back into the construction management. And yeah, so that's how I got started in the whole exterior world, was at that point.
But that's when you started paying attention to
the amount
the time
of money
and
you
the efficiency
make,
and
given your time, yeah.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense.
So yeah, if I had to work a week in the coordinator role, or if I had to do one day of roofing, like the physical work, there's obviously the going to do the sales and all this that you would have to factor in as well. But for me, it was at the time that was going to help me achieve my goal of getting the house. And so that's what I decided to do.
What's the, I don't want the show to ever get political, but like when you're an immigrant, you come to Canada here, you're given certain things. Aren't you given a certain amount, like cash or something? I don't know. Like there's certain things.
I'm not entirely sure. Again, I would
there's
love
a package
to,
of some sort. I don't know. Someone could yell at me or whatever, but I think that there's a package of some sort. And I'm just looking at it like, instead of having that monetary package given to an immigrant that's coming to the, as an incentive to be attracted to come to this country, mm-hmm. that education that you just shared right now mm-hmm. is far more valuable than a package that's just a lump sum of money or whatever, because that motivates them to possibly grow something here.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, even you look in, let's say our business, right? If we had a guy who is a hard worker, he worked with us for a couple of years, maybe he's started to earn close to whatever the highest dollar value we could afford to pay him. Personally, I would have no problem if, you know, I've built a rapport with this person. I trust them. I know their work quality is good. I know they're going to do a good job and represent us well. Should they want to, you know, start their own business where they can then work with us still, but be paid as a subcontractor. So, to us as a business, I think the math works out.
It makes sense.
Similarly, right? Yeah. As a business owner, if you have hourly employees, you pay their WSIB. If they don't have vehicles, then you gotta, you know, provide the vehicles, the tools, all this. So when you factor everything in, if you're paying a subcontractor or if you're paying an hourly employee, if the cost is comparable, I think the subcontracting is the preferred method. I think where it's not preferred is when you get subcontractors who don't reflect well on your business or who don't live up to the quality standards. So that's the challenge, I think, is how do we train people and get people to care enough to do a good quality job that we can then have the relationship where we've given them the opportunity to make more money doing the same thing, right? Again, not an easy problem. I'm not saying I have the solution, and that's why I would love to get feedback to say to see where we can implement these opportunities and then write the book and then offer a guide to at least put it out there that if someone is wanting to get into this business to make money, they don't have to necessarily go through the mistakes that we've all gone through to learn and get to where we are.
I mean, that's the biggest achievement that we could probably pull off. I am seeing a lot of the younger trades that are setting up, establishing good businesses. They're starting to implement a lot of educational tools mm-hmm. for their employees. Mm-hmm. They want to show them the possibilities of where you can be more efficient and make more money. They're also contributing to their own RSPs and CPP. Mm-hmm. They're trying to match them. They're trying to do a bunch of stuff, mm-hmm. but it's also they're educating money management as well too.
Yep.
So you're getting these people, whether they're homegrown Canadians or immigrants, mm-hmm. and they're in their early 20s, it goes back to the mentoring.
Yeah.
They're being educated really valuable lessons mm-hmm. that will benefit them a decade from now.
Absolutely.
And even further, right?
Yeah. Yeah, how to manage your personal finances or simple things like that where it's skills they can keep forever. Or, there's another guy that I work with in the past. We're looking at, bidding a job for a certain product we've never done.
Yeah.
And so we're looking into the numbers and they're like, oh, it looks like a good opportunity. And then he said, he'd had more experience than me at the time. And he said, stick to what you know, right?
Okay.
Stick to what you know. And so in some cases, right, you may think that you want to take on this big risk, but perhaps it's in incremental steps. You're not going to go after that big job that with a product you've never done. You're going to start small, right? And having the guys in the business who've been burned a couple times to provide that mentorship of hey, you know what? Like it may look like this is a good opportunity, but you also need to protect yourself against what if you don't get paid?
Yeah.
What if the material delivery gets messed up? Or what if, X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
Right? So preventing people entering the trades who are going to put themselves out there and try from getting burned and keeping them in the industry, right? So the mentorship is very valuable.
So what do you, Ryan, how is this correctable? Like, I mean, or is that graph just going to continue down that path because of the lack of population being born, like, and couples not having what they're supposed to be, I guess, historically supposed to be having? Like, and if the majority of global is on the same path, how do we correct all this? And it's not an overnight thing that's going to get corrected.
That's
this is decades.
That's the million-dollar question. If we are competing for labor of a smaller and smaller pool, right? Then I think we just have to, find ways to incentivize people to choose construction versus use it as a fallback, which I'm sure you've seen a lot of people that it's a fallback. It's something you can always go into, but maybe you're not going to do it forever. Let's put our best foot forward and be a little more transparent about showing people the potential upside, right? Not just that, you're going to be an hourly employee and for your entire life, if that's what you want to do, right? If you want to be an hourly employee, you don't necessarily want the responsibility and want that, by all means, teach their own. But if you were ambitious or you did want to enter a career that has higher earning potential, but maybe you're not the type to go do sales and go knock on doors and provide samples, right?
Be the sub, yeah.
Yeah, you could be a sub. You could still make great money. As an example, again, not giving names, we worked with a subcontractor and he's a friend of mine. So he's originally from Colombia.
Okay.
And he's got a crew of, I think, 5-6 guys. And he recently just purchased his first house. Similar age to me and I don't think any education beyond high school, and I don't know specifically maybe what he was doing back in Columbia, but I know for a fact he's making over six figures, and he's a subcontractor.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's doing great, and there's a lot of cases like this, but people don't know, right? People don't know that that is possible, I think.
How many kids does he have?
I think he has two. I think he has two kids.
I bet you a third one's coming.
Yeah, maybe.
And so, Ryan, you just been doing this all on your side. Like, just trying to, you started figuring out the efficiencies and you started realizing that there's data behind all this efficiency. And then you started doing your own research on your side, right? It just,
yeah.
And that's how this all came about.
Yeah. It's been something again, you know, trying to grow a business, that relies on labor in a market that is, in a shortage of labor is incredibly difficult, and difficult for everybody. So, it's been something I've been interested in. And if I can, you know, at least, you know, spark a conversation or, you know, give back in some way or contribute to solving the problem, I'm happy to do that. Right. And I'd like to, you know, be an advocate for people getting into the trades, young people getting into the trades. I think it's important. And, I think a good use of time.
Because I think that's what I was asking is that, have you had many conversations with the interior trades, with other trades outside of the roofing and the siding, exterior guys and girls that are they aware of this as well?
I haven't started to have too many conversations about how to structure, like paying people and whatnot. But, so I think there is a difference between the exterior type trades and the interior trades, as far as the calculation or how you go about paying people. And again, I'd love feedback from the interior trades. And I think this is the start of this journey. But again, with help from, you know, people like yourself and others in the industry.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be chatting with them because I'm curious about it. Yeah. I always look at tile setters and trim carpenters. Yeah. And I'm always trying to figure out how do we make this business, because most of them are one person job shops.
Yeah.
How do we make them more efficient, right?
Yeah.
Or they're mostly, like, there's a lot of businesses that are mostly about the old man and son. Right. And then the son is going to take over. And then obviously the son has kids. And then maybe that kid will choose his career, right?
Yeah.
But we don't know. But in the meantime, you should be designing efficiencies that will help your profit stream.
Absolutely, yeah. So back to what we're saying about the interior versus exterior. Yeah. So when I worked at James Hardy, I worked for James Hardy for about a year. I
was on the Canadian side or the American side?
Canadian side. So okay. I was a technical sales rep. And so in order to start our stage of the job, we had to go through like a training process and we had to do what's called a certification. So it was essentially like a market analysis, we had to present to our boss and then the director. And so we had to learn about the market, figure out, you know, how it works, you know, which companies are out there and, you know, the pricing, like what's the on-the-wall cost of the product and how can we look to reduce that in order to encourage more people to use it, these kind of things, right? So in doing that, I started to look at it more from a larger scale perspective versus just like, I'm one business. So if you look at interior versus exterior, interior, let's say in a perfect world, you work 50 weeks at 5 days a week, that's 250 working days. If you're an exterior trade, we're affected by the weather, right? So I had looked up the Ontario weather data or weather statistics. And so I accounted for, you know, how many times did it rain? How many times did it snow? How many cold days where there was temperatures where you couldn't work? How many super hot days, super windy days? Yeah. And so once you factor in all those components, we ended up at about a number of 200 working days for the on average,
50 days shy of the interior.
But. Yeah, so 80% of what the interior would be. So if you are working as an exterior trade, you have to factor this into your total output capacity, right? If we can only work 80% of what the interior guys work, then you could do the math. We need to charge this much more to make up for the fact that we can't work as many days, right? And so that comes back to the how much money do you make given time spent, right? Where subcontracting in the exterior world is a good option because we don't know necessarily how long things are going to take, especially given that you know, we could have windows that are delayed. We could have the masons still working that we can't necessarily start, or maybe we can do one half of the house, but we can't do the other half, right? There's a lot of logistical things. So with, you know, hourly employees, you are always trying to keep them busy and working, even though some projects may not be ready. So if this project's not ready, we have, you know, multiple in the pipe that we can then say, hey, we've got a free day. Can we come and at least, you know, do the Tyvek and the insulation and the strapping? And it's a bit of a shell game sometimes where you're trying to allocate your labor efficiently. So with hourly employees, you have the burden of, you want to keep them working, right? It's taken us 3 years to get five really good employees, right? So we want to...
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, we've got a young team. And I think part of it is, you know, we have fun and, you know, some personal relationships as well have helped get those guys. But yeah, we want them to be able to get their full hours. We want them to be able to make good money. So yeah, we're constantly seeing where the best allocation of the labor is and given the different schedules. So if you had a subcontractor, you know you have a fixed cost at X amount of rate, right? Yeah. Maybe some extras come up and stuff like that. But at least with a subcontractor, I can price the job at this dollar value. I know my labor is going to cost this much. I know material is going to cost this much. And then I'll make this much money. And maybe we allow for a bit of contingency, right? A little bit of extra cost, right? So that's where I see, as a business owner, good subcontractors, I think, are incredibly valuable. Another example, I'll give a shout out.
Sure.
So my buddy, Daniel Miranda, Miranda Craft Roofing.
Sure.
I met him at my first roofing job. And then we had worked together for a little bit too, but I was in school. So, you know, we parted ways. I continued to do school and then, he kept going, but he's been, a subcontractor, worked for a few different companies and he's done incredibly well for himself. Again, a subcontractor, he installs slate, cedar, copper, those kind of things. And it's a very niche skill set.
Yeah, that hard stuff.
It's difficult work. The slate's heavy, it's hot. But he's incredibly talented. So I look at, you know, someone like that who wants to work hard and he has the opportunity. You know, why not have more guys like that, right?
I'd love to get some insight from you, Ryan, about, I love all the data that you've done regarding the entry, getting into construction and then becoming efficient in construction. What's the exit point? Like, how should we, every trade's got to start looking at the exit point, trying to figure out, prepare for their retirement or prepare for possibly another career change or what have you. And when I say prepare, I mean financially speaking.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't want to be struggling or depending on assistance at later years of your life, right?
Yeah.
So are you already starting to look at that for yourself and trying to figure that exit point?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
how young are you, man?
I'm 32.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm definitely thinking about that. It is something that is on my mind, and that's where with the exterior specialist. So I'm setting up a metal shop. We had set up our metal shop with Impact in Toronto.
Okay.
So we were subletting a section off Delta Roofing, and so because I knew one of the project managers there, but I've since moved and the commute for me was like an hour there and then an hour back and then other travel time. So I was in the car 3-4 hours on average a day and it's just, you know, life's short, right?
Yeah.
So the Toronto location didn't necessarily work for that. So I'm setting up the metal shop now at a Hamilton, where it's, you know, a 15-minute commute from my house. And in Hamilton, given a metal shop, is a steel town, right? So it's very fitting.
Yeah.
There's a scrapyard down the street. The supplier I use to get the flat stock is close by. So that's where I'm going to be setting up the metal shop. And that will be my long-term strategy, is that I don't think I'll ever not physically work. Personally, I love it. I love the physical challenge.
But it's also a place of employment for future generations to come there.
Oh, where, sorry?
The shop itself.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to attract more people that might want to consider doing that.
Absolutely.
As a career. And you could be running the day-to-day operations of that.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I want to try to develop products that are efficient. And let's say we do decide to sell new products, maybe they're a little different than what's out there. Making them out of steel with readily available materials. Let's say you're short or you run out or you need an extra this or that. We have the ability to make it versus the lead time to order it. Because in siding, one of the hardest parts is establishing the product, and then, you know, which options with the product, which colors and textures or whatever. And then the second component is placing the order correctly, accounting for the right amount of waste. So that way we're not short when we go to install it, because the lead times, depending on the product, can be quite long, or it could be readily available.
And you don't want the flip side on that either, right? You don't want to be storing all kinds of extra material.
Oh, the...
dealing with that, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys can speak to this, but I'm sure, you know, we all sit on inventory because we don't want to be short, right? So we have all these pieces that we paid money for, and I look at it like, oh, that's few thousand bucks in value just sitting there. Yeah. But if it gets scratched or if it's a different color, you know, we can't necessarily use it all the time, right? And I've seen this at a few different contractor shops, just boxes and stuff and things, because
see it all the time.
Yeah, it's what's the term? I think it's called it's like a perceived loss, right? Like you have a perceived loss of value if you throw it out, but at the same time, it's not actually making you any money.
But technically, it is technically still a loss.
Oh, yes.
Sitting there is still a loss.
Oh, yeah, regardless.
In anticipation of a project that's going to come along that may require that.
Yeah, and personally, I hate wasting things.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a point in time where the environment is being considered, so if we can reduce waste by any means, I think that's something to strive for.
100%, yeah. For sure. I totally agree with you. This has been amazing, Ryan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
No. Yeah. Hopefully a lot of people reach out to you and just start giving you some more insight.
Yeah.
But it's based on those stats, I'm still trying to roll a deck through my whole head about how many people have been on the show and people that I know in construction. I don't know anybody that has more than two kids. And it's bothering the hell out of me now, right? And I'm from a family of five. I'm the fourth in the bunch of five, right? So it's like that was a different time, different generation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that too is the cutoff point, which is still short of what we need to be getting to.
Yeah.
To grow.
Well, just to maintain our population is 2.1.
Yeah.
So if we want to grow our population without the use of immigration, that number's got to be north of 2.1, right? So...
value. I love it. Thanks, Ryan Borkowski, the exterior specialist. Info at the exteriorspecialist.ca, 416-931-0973. Reach on his email or his website, www.theexteriorspecialist.ca, and then also on Instagram under the exterior specialist. 12 questions of construction.
Oh.
Ready?
Yes.
There's no right or wrong, unless you wrote down answers.
Right. I did.
Well, if you've done all that data, I'm assuming that you probably wrote them down.
I like to try to be organized, but...
It's been amazing. At first, when you showed up and I saw that stack, I was like, am I being audited?
No, I always like to speak based on fact. Giving your opinion is cool, but at the end of the day, if we don't know the facts, then what are we doing?
It moves the conversation.
Yeah.
What is your favorite construction word?
Value engineered or value engineering.
Least favorite tool?
Oh, the staple tacker. You know those, you put the staples for like Tyvek or paper or whatever?
Yeah, the politically incorrect name is tomahawk. You know what I mean? It's a hammer stapler. A hammer stapler?
Yeah, it's like a... But that one on a roof, just safety hazard. And then
projectile when it slides along the roof.
Oh, no, I meant if you use the staples and you don't have enough, the paper can slip off the staples.
Oh.
And it's, yeah, I prefer a nail gun, right?
Yeah.
I've seen guys slip on we used to use tar paper when we started versus the synthetic.
Yeah.
And I'd seen it just slip out and, ugh.
I haven't thought about that one in a long time.
Yeah.
What construction sound do you love?
Releasing the hose from the compressor at the end of the day. Yeah.
Favorite beverage?
This was a tough one because there's, you know, a few, but I would say mojito. My brother worked at a bar for a bit, and so we'd go visit him, and he would give us free drinks, and he'd make me mojitos, and it was just
what kind of sugar was he using?
I'm not sure. He just gave me the drink. I drank it, and it just reminds me of those.
I love mojitos, man. Yeah. I long time ago stopped using white sugar, and then I switched it to brown sugar, and now I'm using cane syrup.
Okay.
And cane syrup in a mojito is like really, really good.
I'll have to give that a try.
I'm just saying, it's nice. And also, if you ever get a chance, try a watermelon mojito.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. In the summertime?
Oh, yeah.
Really
nice
refreshing.
Hot day.
Yeah. What turns you on and off in construction?
I kind of mentioned before, off would be waste. I do hate wasting time, wasting materials. Just generally speaking, I think there's a lot of waste in construction. That would be my off. And the turn on would be a well-executed job. So the days where you've got all your material, you've got the guys, you go in and you, we call it slamming, right? The days we slam, you know, those days are great. It makes you feel good at the end of the day and everyone's happy. There's a good mood in the air. So.
That's true. Favorite curse word? I don't think you can see a curse. You're on a roof. You must curse.
Yeah. the good old-fashioned F-bomb, I think. But
favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Oh, favorite vehicle. 1966 Dodge Charger.
With the tail or without?
The fastback. I think it was in a movie, like Great Big Fish or Great Big something. It was a red one, I think. But it's a cool car.
I know what you're talking about. I totally know what you're talking about. What do you miss from your childhood?
Ooh, this is another one. Took me a while to think, but you know when you were in grade school and summer, you would just you didn't have a phone, so you didn't text or anything, but you just ride your bike over to your friend's house, like, "Hey, is whoever home?" And then you'd go to your next friend's house, and then you got like 6-7. Friends
on
just biking
lawn,
and
all the bikes just flipped over right there.
Yeah, just having fun
where everybody was.
Yeah,
I know
that was good.
You hated the friend that had the banana seat. You know what I mean? Like way back when, right?
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Ooh, this is another tough one, but hard to say. But I think stuff like this where you can. It'd be like more like an analyst and like dive into like these topics and kind of learn like the full story behind a problem versus just the, the black and white perspective.
Yeah.
Like there's shades of gray and I love getting into the technical nitty gritty.
We need more of that going on in construction.
I think so. Yeah,
totally. So, what profession would you not like to do?
I think politics, over the, the pandemic and all this, I started watching some of the House of Commons question period and I was watching it. And I'm like, does anyone actually answer the questions? No, it's just for a soundbite. And it's like, what's the point of asking all these questions if you're not going to answer the question? So yeah, it looks exhausting and I don't think I'd have the patience for it.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Okay. So because God is omniscient, right, all-knowing, so all things considered, that I had a net positive effect on those around me.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Ryan. I really appreciate
you.
Your time, man.
Coming this is great.
The show.
Yeah.
Come back anytime if you got more information, and I encourage anybody that's listening
absolutely.
To reach out to you to give up your information if what's going on in your neck of the woods, what's going on in your business and everything like that.
Yeah.
I want to connect you with Aaron from Expert out of Hamilton.
Okay.
Aaron's a solid guy, and I appreciate what he's doing. And he comes from that generation, Irish guy, came over here, had it hard, but he wants to encourage more people coming into construction.
Yep.
So he's trying to remove as many roadblocks as possible and educate them as best as possible so he can continue attracting more people to come into this industry.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. So he would have a lot of insight to you. And then if you haven't heard of Dan Guest from Guest Plumbing and Tradesmart College that he just opened up, he just had the open house at the start of this month, right?
Yeah.
So he's getting 150 students coming in the first term there.
That's fantastic.
And it's a legitimate trades certified college, right? So, and he's doing the exact same thing. He's
What trades, if you don't mind me asking? Like what's
he's his, focusing on starting off with plumbing, the mechanical trades. Okay. So he's starting with those ones, but the idea is that the college wants to grow so to the point where he's going to handle all trades.
Oh, amazing.
Gonna educate all trades, right? Their whole mandate is to not only just teach you about the trade, but also teach you about business fundamentals and also retirement and all everything that's associated with the trade.
Yeah.
So I love what Dan is doing. I love what Aaron's doing and more of them that are out there that are planning some of these stuff. Some of these details, but I'm also, I mean, I'm loving seeing, you know, Mark and Skylux Roofing and everything like that, and he's focusing on growing his workforce and giving them incentives. So, like, we know the hard trades and what they go through.
Yep.
And so they're trying to make it easier for them so they can see the value, because you got these successful business people, trades people that came from swinging a hammer.
Yep.
And now they're basically creating avenues for the next generation of tradespeople. Which is attracting more people to this industry, right?
I would love to get involved in something like that.
I'll connect you to these people so you can chat with them. But
yeah,
those are the three that are topping off in my head right now, right? So, and they'll have some great insight for you as well, too.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
All right, man.
Awesome. This is great. Thanks so much, Ryan. This is great.
I really appreciate it, man.
Cool.
That's it. We're out of here.